Blog Talk Radio.
Radio, and this is Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson. We do each Saturday morning. We're doing it at a little bit different time for the interest of time this morning. We were going to be broadcasting live from the Tarrant County, the candidates forum out there, the candidates fair, but due to sinus problems and sinus headache, and I was out busy last night, we're going to go ahead and just do this from here, but we're going to still have Sid Miller on this morning. He'll be on with us here in a couple of minutes, and we're excited about that. I'm having a great time here in Dallas, let me tell you. Last night, I got to go to my first event, my first political event. And went to a fundraiser for a great candidate, an awesome candidate. She's a grassroots candidate, Connie Burton. And we've talked about her on this show before. Connie's a family woman. She's a businesswoman. But let me tell you, she's grassroots. She's you and I. Most of our listeners on this show have always been those who are active in the grassroots. We like to talk about politics. We like to be active in politics. And that's who Connie is. And went to her fundraiser last night. Got to meet Rafael Cruz, the father of Senator Ted Cruz. Got to meet Dana Roche. You've seen her, I'm sure, on Fox News. She is a new transplant. She just moved here from Missouri to Texas and living out in Fort Worth and going to be on Team Connie and working with her. That was great. Got to meet some really, really great people that I've been Facebook friends with, Vicki Underhill and Adrian Murray and some others. Got to meet Connie's staff and just got to meet a bunch of people here in Texas politics that I've been interacting with for a long time now and got to shake their hand. And the biggest highlight of the night, though, I do have to say, the biggest highlight, Dan, was getting to give Michael Smith of Conservative Nation Radio a great big bear hug. Michael and I go back to the early days of Herman Cain. We've been friends ever since. We started Blog Talk about the same time. Of course, he took Conservative Nation Radio. You can go find them at conservativenationradio.com. He took it to the next level, Dan. I'm going to tell you, he's got a professional thing going. We've always kept it here a little bit more as a hobby, a little bit more as a – I like to think of it as we're all sitting on the couch in the living room having conversation. But he, Michael took it all the way to the top. He's got Conservative Nation Media Inc. now, and that's what he's doing. And it was so good to meet him and his wife, Angela, somebody that I've communicated with and worked with on many different projects and talked with. I've been here in Texas now for a month. I was looking forward to seeing him in person and finally got to do that last night. So we want to give Michael a great big shout out. Great patriot, hardworking patriot. He introduced me to everybody that was anybody last night at that fundraiser for Connie Burton, and we just had a great time. There was great music. There was great entertainment, some great motivational speeches. Let me tell you, Rafael Cruz is everything that you would think, everything that you would think. And you know, Dan, you and I do a lot of talking on this show about Cuba. You know, I always say, you know, all you got to do is look down there at the water below you in southern Florida, that 90 miles across there, the shark-infested waters, and ask which way the people are swimming. Ask which way they're risking their lives in those shark-infested waters, to get from Cuba to the America or to get from the United States of America to Cuba. And we know the answer to that. Well, Rafael Cruz has lived it. Rafael was born in Cuba. He came to the United States for a while, and then he went back. And when he went back, he saw something that was totally different than where he was raised. And he had to come back to the United States. And he came back to the United States because of the freedoms that we hold dear here, the freedoms. And, man, he just had a really powerful speech, a very motivating speech. So did Dana Loesch, man. They both said, you know, we got to get on this. Battleground Texas wants to take and turn Texas blue, just like they turned Colorado blue. And they start with the counties. They start with the supervisors' races. We talk a lot about local races on here. That's one of the reasons why we're looking at the Sid Miller race this morning. He's running for agricultural commissioner here in Texas. You know, those kind of races, Dan, people don't always pay a whole lot of attention to. We always watch the presidential race. Most people know what's going on with that and some with the primaries. The senators and the congressmen, you know, Rodney Lee Conover has become a good friend of mine. Sending him, going to work our hardest to send him to Congress. Those big races are great. But the little races are important, too. The races that nobody ever pays attention to. The commissioner's races, the supervisor's races, from the school board, from the counties, and the agricultural commissioner here in Texas is an important job, and so that's why we support these guys, and we are going to continue to do this. This is what we do. We continue to support. We continue to be active, and we're going to have Sid Miller on here in a few minutes. I told him we would probably have our opening remarks done within about 10 minutes, so he could call in within the first 10 minutes, and so I expect him to pop up on the board any moment now. We're going to have a great discussion about him. Dan, I'm going to pass it to you for your opening remarks. How are you doing down there in the land of the sunny Florida?
Well, sun is going to come out eventually, I guess. It's been freezing down here in Florida, but we're finally warming up, and they tell us that by Sunday or Monday it's supposed to be 80 degrees, so we're all looking forward to that. And speaking of, you know, the local elections, these are where the politicians get their feet wet and where they begin their political careers. This is why it's so important to get involved in local politics. It also lays out the groundwork for the state and gets the state to a position where they're going to be supporting conservative movements. So it is very important for us to get involved on the local basis. I mean, everybody, as you said, you know, everybody gets involved and excited about the the federal level, but yet these most of these people came in on a local level or were involved in politics in some other arena. So it is very important for us to get out there and get to meet our local candidates, find somebody we can support, and then go out there and become active and get these people elected. This way, when the next position opens up on a federal level, they can, you know, run and hopefully get elected, and we can make the changes from here on the grassroots level rather than, you know, having to wait until a person becomes a congressman or a senator. And I'm really excited to meet Sid. And later on, as the year progresses, I'm going to have us meet some of my local candidates, and we can, you know, hopefully get people to call in from each and every state and introduce us to their local representatives. And Rod and Conover, I can't say enough for. Great man, is down to earth, and what I like most about him is he stands by his convictions. You know, so many, I'm not sure for all my followers if they read the blog I put in last night, I described Congress as a bunch of cows who followed, you know, all they care about is their grazing and their migration around, and they really don't pay attention to much of anything else until they are disturbed. And then they'll run away until the threat is gone, and then they go back to their grazing. They don't stand up. There's a few bulls out there who turn around and will take on the adversary, but the problem is they don't have the support from the rest of the herd, and they are forced to go back to the herd, and nothing gets done. And that's a good representation of what is happening today in Congress. We have a few bulls out there who are willing to take on the establishment, but when they look back, they have nobody behind them supporting them. And this is what we have to change. You know, we need patriots, conservative patriots, who are willing to go out there and stand before these people and say, enough is enough, and not be intimidated and be forced to back down. Now, we have to get out there and, I mean, this administration has gotten away with so much, and it's because people do not have the nerve to stand by their convictions and say, this is wrong. And we're losing our country because of that. Think about what our forefathers went through. They lost everything, and yet they stood by their convictions. They died by their convictions. And that's what a true patriot is. And a true conservative is very much the same. You know, I hope we don't have to go as far as dying for this nation. But if that's what happened is needed, then so be it. You have to be willing to commit 150% before, you know, you're a true patriot. And I'll be happy to die for my country. No, well, not happy, but I'll be, you know, I will do it if necessary. And that's what you have to do to be a patriot. You have to be willing to stand up to these jerks and say enough is enough. And if you read those who follow me on my homepage and my Facebook page, I have no problems speaking up against our politicians today, and thank God I stay out of running for office for one very good reason. I can speak my mind openly, and I don't have to sugarcoat it at all or make it look good. I can just speak it out and act with them. People don't like what I have to say, that's their problem. And I just deliver it the way I see it, and that's that. And, you know, we need more people, more patriots involved who are willing to do that. Scott, you and I have had the pleasure to know many people who are like that, who speak out and will stand behind their convictions. And, you know, we have friends like D-Rock, who is, you know, growing in popularity by the hour. His girlfriend, Kim Paris, who has created two wonderful organizations that are going to be supporting grassroots candidates, and she gets that information out and has a rally during the summer, her Common Sense rally during the summer. And it's a wonderful, you know, to see people that are doing this. You know, we don't get, none of us get paid for doing this. We do this out of love for country. And this is what we need to do, is wake up more patriots and get them involved in what we're doing and get them to see the light that it's getting time where if we don't stand up and start standing for our convictions, we're going to lose our nation. I mean, I went out and to help our Second Amendment friends. I went out and got my a Colt 45 and am waiting for my concealed weapons permit to come back in. And I'm doing this for two parts. One is obviously because of my health, I can no longer defend myself physically. But number two is in support of the Second Amendment. And, you know, I'm going to be doing other things involved in our 4th, 5th, 10th to try to get people to understand what we're losing. Because this is, see, the foundation of this country is God, the Constitution, and love of nation. And see, I believe every candidate, whether they're a Democrat or Republican, needs to stand for these very three simple principles. And if they don't stand for these principles, they don't belong running for office. And with that, I'll pass it back to you and Dallas, Scott.
Well, you know, exactly, Dan. And, you know, that's why I, man, there's a lot of people out there who are good, solid conservatives. And we've seen a lot of candidates like that. That's never enough for me. Because, you know, I've seen some solid conservatives go into Congress, go into the Senate, even go into the White House. And when they get there, the money, the influence starts to change them. And they start to move. They start to waffle. And so I'm not just happy with a solid conservative, although that's where I have to start. Because I myself am a solid conservative. I believe in basic principles that the conservative platform is laid on top of. I believe that life is precious. I believe that smaller local government is better suited to handle the situations that come up that you have to deal with in a society. I believe that. I believe that big, large government always ends up in a boondoggle. No matter how intensely, what's the word I'm looking for? No matter how intensely they expect to do what's right, oftentimes it ends up what's wrong. We look at our bills that are coming out of Washington, D.C., and what do we see? We see these big old huge thick bills that only a lawyer can read. They're bills that have all kinds of loopholes in them, and it's insane. So I'm not just happy with a solid conservative. What I want is I want some confidence. I want confidence that when that person goes to Washington, D.C., that they're going to still be the same person when they leave as they were when they got there. And that's important to me. I've got to have confidence that they're willing to stand up and fight. I've got to have confidence that they're willing to stand up and stand on their principles no matter what goes on. And we see some candidates that you just know when they get to Washington, D.C., they're going to waffle. And so I don't give my support to those kinds of candidates. And then we've got some candidates that we see. Rodney Conover is one big one that I know when he gets there, he's still going to be Rodney Lee Conover. I talk to him. In fact, Rodney and I talk almost on a daily basis now. And I'm helping him put together his team. And let me tell you, I have not ever supported a candidate that I was as confident as I am in Rodney Lee Conover. Ever.
Oh, why?
This man has got a core, a value system, a core system that is firm. He's planted in cement. You're not going to move him. You're not going to push him over. If you go to bribe him, he's going to say, I'm going to tell everybody that you're bribing me. I'm going to tell everybody. You know, if we get people elected that have a core stand that they stand on and they're willing to fight and stand up for what they believe in, then we're going to have things happening correctly in Washington. If you end up with a bunch of people who are influenced one way or the other once they get there, well, some things, yeah, maybe we don't necessarily want to stand so hard on that. You know, we got the political game we got to play. I'm done with political games. And I've been involved in politics long enough to understand that there's certain, you know, there's a certain amount of the game that you got to play. I understand that. Nothing gets done if you don't play a certain amount of the political game. But we're talking about people who just get immersed in it, and they think they're playing Monopoly up there in Washington, D.C. They think they're playing Monopoly in the State House. You know, last night, Dan, at Connie Burton's fundraiser, Connie Burton is us. She's real. She's grassroots. She's willing to fight for what she believes in. She's willing to stand. I can give her my full support. I knew that before I got there last night, and after meeting her and talking to her, I know that to be fact now. I've watched as person after person told me stories about how hard she works and how much she believes in what she believes in and how she wants to go to Texas and keep Texas, Texas. You know, Ted Nugent is a big fan of Sid Miller's in his inner circle. And, in fact, if you go to Sid Miller's website, you'll see an endorsement video from Ted Nugent. And you know what Ted Nugent says is if you want to keep Texas, Texas, if you want to keep Texas, Texas, elect Sid Miller. That's the kind of people we need. And that's what you're talking about. You know, as we look over the history of our country, and you and I always go back to the summer of 1787, such an important summer in the history of our country. Those men in there wanted to keep the United States that they were starting to build, the United States. And that's what this is all about. That's why we support the candidates we support. And it looks like we've got Sid Miller on the line. We're excited about this. Let me tell you, this is one that I've been looking forward to. Anybody that knows me knows that I only support a certain kind of candidate. Dan, we just talked about this. It's not enough to me for you to be a solid conservative. I got to know that you're going to stand like cement where you stand, and you're going to be willing to fight. And we've got Sid Miller on the line this morning. Well, we did have Sid Miller on the line this morning. He just dropped. He must be having a hard time calling in. Just a second here. Let me look and make sure that this is exactly what's going on here. Just a second here.
Sure, no problem. But I agree.
There he is. There he is. He's back on the line. We don't want to make sure we drop him. I know cell service isn't always really good. But there's two things. You've got to be a solid conservative, but I've got to know character. I've got to know what you believe in, and that you're going to fight for it, that you're going to stand for it. And Sid Miller's got that reputation. Last night I talked to a few people about Sid Miller at that Connie Burton fundraiser, and everybody said the exact same thing. Sid Miller is Sid Miller, and Sid Miller's going to fight. And so that's why we need to have people like this that we've just discussed, Dan, in Congress, in state houses, in these commissioners, in these supervisors. And, you know, we've talked about something else. This is the second thing, and then we'll introduce Sid. The local races. Herman Cain said go local. Sometimes we pay attention to the primary, presidential primary, the presidential election, the Congress, the state house. And then we sometimes tend to ignore these, like Dave Souza running for supervisor of El Dorado County. We get the ballot, we look at it, we go, well, what's a supervisor? And agricultural commissioner, what's an agricultural commissioner? And so these races are just as important, too, because these are the races where the other side is trying to take over quietly while nobody's paying attention. So with no further ado, I want to introduce Sid Miller. Sid, it is so good to have you on the show. I've been looking forward to this for a very long time. I've always liked what I see. You're one of a small handful of candidates that I've got. They're all ranchers, and I'm a firm believer that ranch life, farm life brings about a special character. We had a president of the United States that is near and dear to us who was a rancher, and that was where a lot of his character came from. Sid Miller, welcome to the show.
It's good to be with you today. Sorry I'm a little late calling in. I'm at a Canada fair in Hearst, Texas, and they had us all up and talking and interviewing, and time just got away from me. So my apologies for being a little tardy today.
Oh, it's okay. I know you're busy. I was going to be out there with you today. I got in late last night, and I woke up. My sinuses were giving me a headache, and I went, I'm not going to drive back out there. But I'm excited to have you on, Sid. And we've been, Dan and I have been talking in the last few minutes about character and about solid stands, and that's one of the reasons why I really, really like your candidacy. You know, I've got a handful of candidates that I like to support. They've got to be solid conservatives, but I know they've got to instill confidence that when they go to elected office, that they're going to be the same person there as they ran as a campaign. And a lot of my candidates, though, have never, ever been in state office. They've never been in any kind of elected office. So we go, you know, we go on gut feeling. But you've got priors. You've gone to the state house in Texas, and you've proved yourself. You've proved that we could have confidence in you, that Sid Miller is going to be Sid Miller, the same Sid Miller as in the campaign as when he gets elected. And that's why I'm excited about you. I want to hand it to you a little bit to tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit of a biography, what you've done and what you're currently doing. And then after that, I want to go into a little bit about what an agricultural commissioner does. A lot of people don't know some of these other offices that we don't always get the attention that they should. So with that, welcome, Sid Miller. Tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm the conservative in the Texas Agriculture Commissioner race. I'm pro-life, pro-God, pro-gun, pro-business, pro-family, pro-military, pro-constitution. I'm anti-Obama. I make my living off the land. I'm an eighth-generation farmer and rancher. My family moved to this country in the mid-1700s. We fought in the Revolutionary War. We fought in the War of Northern Aggression, and then ended up in Texas after that, so four generations of us have been farming and ranching here in Texas. I live in Stephenville, Texas. I've been married to my high school sweetheart for 36 years. We have two sons. They're grown and have their own families and two beautiful grandchildren. I make my living off the land there in Stephenville. I'm a farmer, grow various crops. I have cattle and horses, and I'm a tree farmer there in Stephenville. I'm a graduate of Tarleton State University with a degree in agriculture. I'm the only one in the race that has a degree in agriculture. And the early part of my adulthood, I've spent as a vocational agriculture teacher, FFA advisor, 4-H leader, educating our youth and preparing them to return to the family farm for a life in agriculture, and many first-time students for a career in agriculture, and that's important in this state. I served on my local school board, served six terms in the Texas House. I served on the Agriculture and Livestock Committee, was vice chair of the Ag and Livestock Committee, and was chairman of the Agriculture and Livestock Committee. And that's important in this race because that's the committee that has direct oversight of the Texas Department of Agriculture in developing its budget and what it does over there. So I'm the only one in the race that has a deep, vast working knowledge of that agency. I also chaired another committee called Homeland Security and Public Safety, where I had oversight over the Texas Rangers, DPS, and securing the Texas border. We've got in the race late, the end of October. Most other candidates have been running 3 or 4 months. I had a friend of mine agreed to be my treasurer and state co-chair, and that was Ted Nugent. We know he's a great freedom fighter and Second Amendment champion, and proud to call him my blood brother. We've been very successful in getting the conservatives groups to endorse us. Just all the conservative groups that have endorsed are endorsing our campaign, like Texas Right to Life. Of course, I was the author of the sonogram bill that's saving 20,000 babies a year. And Young Conservatives of Texas, we're glad to have them. Texas for Fiscal Responsibility. We've got the Conservative Republicans of Texas, the homeschool group, and not just conservative groups. We've got a lot of agriculture groups that are supporting our campaign. We've got the Texas Quarter Horse Association, the Texas Association of Dairymen, the Texas Nursery and Landscape Association, Exotic Wildlife, and Crop Dusters, and on and on and on. So, and even individual leaders like Kathy Adams with Eagle Forum, Kelly Shackford with Liberty Institute, Jonathan Sines with Texas Values. We have Tim Lambert with the Homeschool Coalition, Billy Barton, Wall Builders, Rick Green with Patriot Academy, Michelle Smith with the Concerned Women of America, and several dozen elected officials, including congressmen and state representatives. And then we've got a lot of grassroots support, too, precinct chairs, county chairmen. All the Tea Party groups that are endorsed are backing us, Northeast Tarrant County, Julie McCarty over there, and we've got North Texas Tea Party, the Texas Patriot Pack, Montgomery County Tea Party, Hood County Tea Party, Clear Lake Tea Party, and the list goes on and on. So we're proud to have all of those supporting our campaign. Of course, the most important endorsement that we could get in this race we don't have yet, and that's your listeners out there. Their individual votes what ultimately counts on March 4th. So we're out working hard to gain that support, and we feel like we're getting there.
Well, and that's, you're right, Sid, and that's what's important. And that's why we do these shows. And we're going to make sure that every one of our listeners understands why it's important to get out there and help Sid. Not just vote, but get out there and help. I want to encourage everybody, go to millerfortexas.com. Go to millerfortexas.com. Check Sid out for yourself. See if I'm not telling you the truth. This man has, and I'm going to talk about an impressive list of endorsements. But Sid Miller will be Sid Miller when he becomes the agricultural commissioner. And that's what's important. Also go to at Miller for Texas on Twitter. Follow him. Retweet his stuff. Go to Facebook. Sid Miller is his page. Go there and retweet this stuff. Get the word out. Tell your neighbors. If you're here in Texas, tell your neighbors. If you're not in Texas, get in. And you know, Kane people especially know how to get on the Internet and help support somebody from out of state. I was trying to support you the best I could when I was still in California. And, you know, Sid, I came from the San Joaquin Valley in California, the breadbasket of the world. I understand agriculture, and I understand the importance of common sense decision-making on the part of agriculture. We got a problem out there in California where the liberals have taken the water away from the farmers for a piece of bait, a bait fish. And, you know, some insanity can go on, and it can really disrupt not just agriculture. Agriculture is just the start. It can disrupt the economy. It can disrupt jobs. It can put people out of work. So it's an important, important position. And so I want you to give us a rundown of exactly what does an agricultural commissioner do, and why is it important that we have a solid conservative with good character in that position?
Well, let me preface that by saying why I'm running. As I look at our country, I see it becoming more and more like socialist European countries. And as I look at Texas, I see the same thing happening. You mentioned California being the breadbasket of the nation. Well, you know, maybe not so much anymore, and it's because of the over-regulation out there. You know, you can't have chickens in cages or hogs in crates, or you have to have, you know, the air quality standards and the water issue out there has driven the dairy industry out of that state. You know, you have to have a porta potty at the end of every turn row. So I'm kind of old school Texan. You know, I've always made my living off the land, and I understand our rural values and our rural work ethic and our Western heritage and our rural lifestyle and our family values. And I don't want to see that slip away. I want to carry on that tradition and be the one that steps in the gap and make sure that we have our youth that can stay on these family farms and carry on our rural heritage. The Texas Department of Agriculture is a large department. It's a lot misunderstood. It has about 2.5 billion dollar budget, and about $2 billion of that is passed through from the federal government. It's the USDA nutritional programs, like the school breakfast program, school lunch program, Meals on Wheels. It's also has a lot to do with consumer protection. The Texas Department of Agriculture is in charge of all the weights and measures in the state, making sure that that the merchants in Texas are honest and of high integrity. So every fuel pump in the state of Texas is calibrated and checked by the Texas Department of Agriculture. If you buy and sell gold, we check those scales. If you weigh trucks or postage or anything that's sold by volume or measure, we're going to certify those scales and make sure that the Texas consumer is being protected. It's also about the usual stuff you think about, like, egg inspection and pesticides and structural pest control and overseeing that industry and the floriculture industry and the horticulture industry and do all those inspections, plant quarantines and the such. But Texas Commission of Agriculture is also kind of the cheerleader for Texas agriculture, the chief marketeer, making sure that our mothers have the safest, most affordable, most abundant food supply in the nation. So that's a big portion of it. And then it also has responsibility to bring young farmers and ranchers into the agriculture and make that pathway as easy as possible and recruit and help get those young men and women, give them the opportunity to stay on the family farm and make a living in agriculture. So, like I said, it's kind of a big agency, but agriculture is the second largest economy in the state, next to oil and gas. And people think that oil and gas is Texas' most precious natural resource, and some would argue it's water, but I'm going to argue that it's the youth of our state. So one of the things as Agriculture Commissioner, I want to make sure that we reach out to those youth and we educate them about agriculture and where those products come from and encourage them to seek a career in agriculture, whether it be a vocational program or actually staying on the family farm. And I'd like to take all those jobs in Austin that are under the Texas Department of Agriculture and push them back out into the rural communities where these government employees can actually connect and have some job opportunities in rural areas so people can have that job that allows them to stay on the family farm and continue the lifestyle that as we know it. And I just want to keep Texas, Scott. That's the bottom line.
Exactly. And that's what Ted Nugent says on the front page of your website. If you want to keep Texas, elect Sid Miller. And, Sid, you just said something that really sparked my interest because this is huge with me. This is why I'm a conservative. I'm a firm believer that the federal government cannot micromanage. I'm a firm believer that the higher up you get in government, the more waste, fraud, and abuse, and you get all kinds of messes. The closer locally you get, you've got a better opportunity to handle the people. And I love the fact that you want to take the jobs in Austin and put them back out where the people are because it's common sense, folks. It is absolute common sense. And we don't want to keep you too long because I know you're busy out there at that forum and there's a lot of people that want to meet you. One more question I want to ask him, and I'll pass it to Dan for anything he wants to say, and then we'll go ahead and let you go. But I'll tell you something that's more important to me than anything right now, Sid, is character. It's absolute character. And farmers and ranchers have a special character. They have a special character because sometimes at 4 o'clock in the morning, you're up working. There are things that have to be done. Farmers and ranchers are not lazy. They're hard workers, and there's a certain level of character that comes from being raised on a farm, from working on a farm. We've got Dave Souza out in California running for a small supervisor's race in El Dorado County. I give him a lot of support. It's a small race, but it's important because he's a good man, and you can call him a good man partially because of who he is, because of where he was raised and how he was raised. We've got some others. Rodney Lee Conover was raised in the middle of a cornfield, and he's running for California Congress 08, and he's solid in his work ethic, he's solid in his beliefs, and And you also are a rancher. You've been raised in that lifestyle. And I want you to just kind of talk to our listeners about that character that develops and the things that you learn and the things that you have to do when you're dealing with the animals and you're dealing with that kind of a lifestyle. Because I think that's important. I think that's one of the things that made Ronald Reagan who Ronald Reagan was his life as a rancher. It helped build his character. So I want to pass it back to you for that, and then we'll hand it to Dan for any questions he's got.
Well, there's an old saying, and it says that, you know, you can tell a lot about a man by the friends he keeps. And the future of farming is a faith born not of words, but of deeds. And that's kind of the old, you know, stereotypical Texan, you know. Don't listen to what he says because he doesn't say much. Just watch what he does and how he lives his life, you know, how he gets up and, you know, when I was a kid, I'd get up before daylight. We had chores to do. We'd go do chores, come in, Mom makes a big breakfast, and then we'd get on the school bus and go to school. So it's all about that work ethic. That's part of it. But it's also about praying around the supper table and getting the kids up and going to church on Sunday morning and Sunday school and helping with Bible school in the summer. And you know, it's just something about the rural lifestyle where you're being connected to the land. It makes you feel closer to God. I don't know how to explain it. It's something you have to feel and something you have to experience. But I had a reporter down at the Houston Chronicle wanting to know why, you know, that I carried the sonogram bill, and I talked about that some when I'm campaigning. He said, well, just why does abortion have to be an issue in the Agriculture Commission's place? What does that have to do with anything? And I just looked him in the eye and said, well, look, it tells you about the man's character. Character is important. I have a good friend that served in the legislature, Susanna Hutt. She was going to have knee surgery, so she asked her family doctor, who's the very best knee surgeon without exception? He said, well, it's Dr., you know, so-and-so, and he's of good moral character. She said, well, I could care less if he runs around on his life or what he does in his private life. I want someone that's good at fixing my knee. And he said, oh, yeah, moral character does count. She said, well, why is that? He said, because you need to be able to trust him when your eyes are closed. And that's the way character is in your elected leaders. You need someone that you can turn your back on and not have to worry about them. You know they're going to do the right thing no matter what. You need someone that's a statesman and not a politician. And if you don't know the difference, a politician will do or say whatever is expedient or popular at the moment to get elected. But a statesman will do whatever is right, no matter what it costs him. And that's what character is about in elected office to me.
Amen. I have to tell you, amen. And, you know, I have preached the gospel for 30 years, Sid, and I'll tell you an illustration that I've always given. Adam and Eve were in the garden, and Adam and Eve made some mistakes, and what did God do to teach Adam a lesson? He made him go out and learn to dig in the dirt. And, yep. You know, that's important. There's a statue in Porterville, California, where I come from, where we raise a lot of orange trees, and it's a man sitting on his plow, and he's got something in his hands, and he's looking at his hands. And when my youngest niece was little, every time we went by that statue, I said, Sid, Anna, what's the man doing? And she learned that he was looking at the dirt. He was looking at the dirt to see if it was good enough to grow orange trees. And, you know, it's huge. Little things make a big difference. But digging in the dirt is huge. If anybody hasn't dug in the dirt and played in the dirt, go out today. I don't care if you're 90 years old and play in the dirt. Because you're absolutely right, Sid. You're absolutely right. It's a beautiful thing that dirt God can take, and we plant a seed in that dirt, and out from that dirt grows all the trees. And from those trees and from those plants that grow, the animals eat it, and it's what we've got, the circle of life. And I do. I think it's just huge. I think it's a huge thing. And Dan Wilson is with us in Florida. He's my co-host on Saturday Symposium. In fact, it's Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson. Dan's a great patriot, Sid. He's been a friend for a while now. We love him. I want to pass it to him. Dan, do you have any questions for Sid?
Yeah, Sid. It's great to meet you, and I'm your neighbor from across the Gulf, and as you know, Florida is also a very big state when it comes to agriculture.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, people don't realize it, but, you know, they think of the beaches and everything. But Central Florida, from south of Lake Okeechobee right up to the border, used to be cattle country. And, you know, Florida used to be, I'm not sure if they still are, but they used to be the number one cattle producer in the country. And so that we run into a lot of the same thing issues that you do. Matter of fact, in my first job, I baled hay. That was the first job I got paid for. And I remember going out there and with five other people and with the hay truck in the middle, and we were picking up the bales by hand, throwing them up. You know, we did up to 2,300 bales in a day. So, you know, I know where you're coming from, what it's like to, you know, make a living off the land. And, you know, I've done my hunting, my duck hunting, my deer hunting, and it's, you have to live it to understand it. And I was lucky enough, my father was a professor, but my best friend, when we went out hunting, it was, if we didn't get anything, his family went hungry. So I know what it's like to live that lifestyle, and I know how important it is, you know. Going out there, that deer is a month's worth of food. And, you know, those ducks are a couple meals. So it's, you know, I can see where you're coming from and how important your job, hopefully your job is. And I want to know, does your state interact with Florida much in the agriculture department? And how are they doing is in keeping the land? Here in Florida, we're losing a lot of the land because the local farmers are being bought out by these subdivisions, and we're losing a lot of our farmland to, you know, tourism. Are you having the same problem?
We do have the same problem here in Texas. We, you know, we have our farmers and ranchers are having to produce more off of less land every year. So there is a lot of bio research in Texas and across the nation, and we do get more proficient in that. And one of the things I did in the legislature is I passed legislation that would prevent cities from annexing land that has an agriculture valuation that's been down its appraisal office. A lot of times, it just basically puts you out of the farming and ranching. And they said, no, keep doing that. Well, you can't pile up a brush pile and burn it. You can't spray. You can no longer hunt or, you know, discharge a firearm in the city limits. So we passed that, and it was a good deal for the farmers and ranchers. It was also a good deal for the cities, but it allowed them to leapfrog that ag land and annex whatever it was they were after, if it was, you know, a subdivision or an industrial complex or something like that. But we continued to work on that, and it's a property rights issue. But, you know, our state is up to 26 million people now, so we have to do a better job of not only managing our water but our land. And we're doing that here in Texas, and we lead the charge on that. One thing I was going to mention, I didn't finish telling you the story about that Houston Chronicle reporter. After I answered his question about why is abortion important to the Agriculture Commission, right? He asked me, he said, well, what's the difference then? I said, you want to save all these human babies, but you passed a bill to allow farmers and ranchers to hunt hogs out of helicopters and kill them. So why aren't you about saving baby hogs? What's the difference? I said, well, you know, God gave that baby a soul. God gave us those pigs for bacon and sausage and ham hocks and pork tenderloin. So that's the difference. So he kind of shut up after that, didn't ask me anymore.
So anyway, I wanted to share that with you. That's the difference.
And amen. Absolutely amen. You know, I homeschool, and my oldest and my youngest nieces, and we talk a lot about, we're doing animals and plants right now, and we talk a lot about the difference between human beings and animals. And I tell you, there's a lot of people out there that'll save the whales. They'll hitch themselves up to a giant steamship to save the whales, but they have absolutely no problem aborting a baby because they believe that animals and human beings are the same thing. I said, but all you got to do is look at the doorbell, or look at the car tire and see that there's no animals that have created that. And human beings are different than animals. And I amen that, Sid. I tell you, you stirred up the liberals when you said that, for sure. And I love it. But that's why I like you. You say it as it is. You're not afraid to say it is. And let me tell you, you hit the nail on the head when you said the difference between a statesman and a politician. We got too many politicians. I really don't like politicians. I love statesmen, and I love a person with character that's willing to get up there and stand up for what he believes in. In fact, I would rather have a Democrat that's in as opposed to a Republican that will just follow the money. There's a character issue there that's important. And I want to thank you for your time. I know that you're going to really be busy out there at the fair in Tarrant County, the candidate fair, the forum. I wanted to get out there today. I will get out to the next activity. You've got my full support. I think you've known that. Anything you need, you got me on Facebook. You let me know. And Dan, we've been talking about you on Saturday Symposium, and we've been talking about you on the Parental Sovereignty Radio Show that we do on Tuesday nights. And we're going to continue doing that. I'm looking forward to the victory party. I'll be rooting and hollering right here in Mesquite when you win that, for sure. And I want to pass it back to you. Is there any closing remarks you want to make? Anything else that you want to add?
Well, I'm just concerned for our country as a whole in the direction that we're headed, Scott. It's it's in a sad state. On the bright spot, I do have confidence in the American people that we will rally and take our country back to the direction that it's headed. If we're going to do that, though, I'm convinced without a shadow of a doubt, Texas is going to have to lead the way. It's going to have to start right here. And I just encourage your listeners to get involved. The primary election is 31 days away, March 4th. I think this month just has 28 days. Get out there. Find good candidates, find men and women of good moral character, and get behind them, and let's get some good people in office. Because if we don't elect godly men and women, we allow the ungodly to rule us. So that would be my last word for your listeners today. Thank you for having me on. God bless.
Hey, no problem, Sid. We thank you for that. And this show will be an archive, and we'll continue to post it over the next 30 days or so. The primaries are, they're coming up quick. And so we want to encourage all of our listeners, please, the best way you can find out about Sid Miller, go to his website, read about him, read that list of endorsements, read who he's got support from, millerfortexas.com. MillerForTexas.com. And the part that I hate, the money part of politics, but it's so important. If you can give Sid some money, give him some money. It takes money to do this. It takes money to get gas to go around to these places like the Tarrant County Candidates Fair where Sid is talking from this morning and all of these things. It takes money. So if you can donate, donate. If you can help retweet, retweet. If you're in Texas and you've got a friend, tell them about Sid Miller. Get them out and encourage them to vote. We got a lot of people. We got 3/4 of the Christian nation in this country don't vote. Get your friends. Tell them at church. Don't be afraid to talk politics at church. You tell them our rights are being getting ready to be really, really trampled on in the churches if they don't get out and vote. And tell them to vote for Sid Miller for agricultural commissioner. And now you know how to tell them exactly what the commissioner is. So we thank you so much, Sid. You're welcome anytime. We talk about you a lot, and we're going to continue to talk about you, and we're going to continue to talk about you when you are the agricultural commissioner here in the state of Texas.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. God bless. Appreciate you.
All right. No problem, and you have fun. Dan, he was exactly what I expected. Exactly what I expected. And you know me. You know, for a while now, you know what kind of candidates that I support. And there's, man, I got like 100 candidates out there that I know on a certain level that are solid conservatives. But I've only got a handful of about 5 or 6 that I have full confidence that when they get to their elected office, they are going to do what's right. And I think Sid Miller said it, and I'm going to pass it to you with this. Let's discuss this for a few minutes. The difference between a politician and a statesman, that's huge. We didn't have any politicians in the summer of 1787 in that office or in that room. We had a bunch of statesmen, and they didn't all agree. In fact, there were some of them that I disagreed with, the positions that they took. But they were statesmen, and that's what founded this country. That's what made this country great. And over the decades, especially in your lifetime, in my lifetime especially, we've seen really the rise of the politician. We got the guy, he gets elected, he goes to Washington, D.C., and he starts playing the game. He starts to feel more important than he is, or she. My favorite, Barbara Boxer, please call me senator, I've earned it. Blech. She hadn't earned anything. And, you know, we've got some senators and some congressmen. We've got some people in the state houses that are working hard. And we've got some that stand up for what they believe in. Ted Cruz here in the state of Texas. Boy, he stands up for what he believes in. But there's a big difference between a statesman and a politician. And I'm done with politicians. I'm really done with politicians. I'm ready to get behind the statesman. What say you, Dan?
Well, let's say, you know, you brought up a really good point there. And the biggest change took place during World War II. The person you had from the 30s throughout most of the war was a politician, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And, you know, he was out to try to appease everybody, and he played the political game down to a T. He actually made almost, you know, the definition of politician is exactly what he was. And what was funny is that his last election, he wanted to get people from the Midwest. So he brought in basically a man who grew up farming too, by the name of Harry S. Truman. Truman was from a small town in Missouri, and he was not a politician. He was kind of roped into it, actually, and never really liked it. But when his parties, you know, brought him in and wanted him to be vice president, they said okay, and Roosevelt agreed to it because he figured that Truman would never get into the position of president because he was afraid of Truman. He actually thought Truman would bring down the Democratic Party. And well, we know that Roosevelt died all of a sudden. He had that stroke, and a few months later, he was gone. And Harry S. Truman came in. And Harry S. Truman was a statesman. He wasn't a politician. He just gave it a shot right off his hip. He told people the way he felt personally. And I don't agree with everything he did while he was president. But let me bring up 2 examples. January 1945, they had finally almost were ready for testing the first atomic weapon. And they, you know, the Joint Chiefs went to him and told him about this super bomb. And after Trinity in April, with the first atomic test, they went to Truman and they said, we're ready to use this weapon. And Truman knew that there was going to be hundreds of thousands of Japanese people who were going to be killed. But he also knew that had we had to go in and invade Japan, the numbers would have been in the millions on both sides. But that was not a very easy decision. Harry went out and thought it over, and he decided that the use of the atomic bomb was the best way to save lives on both sides. And that was not an easy decision, and yet he did it. And we'll move forward now to the Korean War. And he was coming up on an election year. And General MacArthur was becoming a little bit too big on himself. He was thinking of himself above the level of president. And MacArthur wanted to run the North Koreans to the border, and if necessary, invade China and start a war with China. Truman knew that going into China would bring in Russia and the beginning of a third world war. So Truman said, you know, no to this. MacArthur went out and started assembling troops and started moving north of, what was it, 34th parallel. And it really ticked off Truman. So Truman ordered MacArthur to visit him, to come to Washington so they could have a sit-down. Now, MacArthur thought nothing of Truman. He thought he was just a hick from nowhere, Missouri, and he couldn't stand up to a great general like him. And when he arrived in Washington, he elected to kind of just hang around for a little while and keep Truman waiting. And he showed up a half hour late to the meeting he was supposed to have with Harry S. Truman. And Truman goes to MacArthur. He goes, I don't give a damn what you think about me, but you must respect the office of the President of the United States. And I expect your resignation tomorrow. And, kicked him out. Well, MacArthur, according to this country, was second to none. I mean, the only person who was above MacArthur was God to many, many Americans. So Truman took a tactical decision that he knew that in all likelihood that he would lose the election. I mean, the Chicago Tribune was so sure that Dewey would beat Truman in the coming election, they sent out papers with saying Dewey won the election over Truman, and that's probably one of the biggest mistakes in printed history. I remember the picture of Harry S. Truman holding up that newspaper. But this is the difference between a statesman and a politician. The statesman is going to stand up for his convictions regardless of political careers, regardless of anything. He did what he felt was what was best for this country. And he had to make two major decisions during the course of his political career, both of which could have brought his career to an end, and one that almost did. But, he wasn't a politician. He was a statesman. And since then, there's only been one other statesman and who was willing to give up his career, his political career, to do what's right, and that was Gerald R. Ford. Ford came in, of course, right after the Nixon scandal and Watergate, and the country wanted to hang him. And everybody wanted to bring Nixon to trial and to see his butt being thrown in jail. Now, Ford really thought about that, and I was honored to have the chance to have met Ford, you know, about 20 years later. But, and just wanted to say he was a great man. But what he did is he sat down there and goes, this nation has an open, festering wound, which is called Vietnam. And what we need to do is to allow this nation to heal. And he knew that by bringing Nixon to trial, that it would only leave that wound open. So he pardoned Nixon, and it cost him his political career. But this is another case of a statesman who did what was right rather than being a politician to do what would get him reelected. And see, these are people who I call honorable. These are the ones who will stand up right next to what their decision is, and they refuse to balk regardless of anything, and including their political careers. Because their job is not to be politicians. Their job is to be statesmen. Their job is to represent their state and the people of the United States, sometimes making decisions that are not necessarily popular. And in, you know, the summer of 1787, we had a major fight between the North and South pertaining to slavery. And we knew that even though the slavery issue was put into the Constitution, everyone knew it was going to come to a head, and it was going to come to a head in the not-too-distant future. And they were right. Within 100 years, we were at a civil war. And but you see, our forefathers wanted to see what was best for the nation, how to put together a nation. They understood that we were 13 different states. We were not. We were united under one flag who was supposed to only do a certain amount of things. And the whole idea with the federal government was commerce, protection, and interstate travel. And now those were really the three primary things the federal government was supposed to do. And over the years, we pretty much tried to keep to that. Right up through, you know, really the Wilson generation. And Wilson was the first of the progressives to try to take control over this nation as one, and it took till the FDR years before he was able to start the progressive movement. And after that, it kind of mellowed during the Truman years, and during the Eisenhower years, it also stayed loyal. And even up right through John F. Kennedy was thinking, You know, he was saying, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. So he still had that belief in the individual and state sovereignty. And it, under LBJ is really where the progressive movement really began to take off. And ever since, we've been little by little been having our rights chipped away. And we are to this point where the progressive movement has crossed the line into a socialist state. And if we don't turn the country back on track, it's going to go from a socialist state to a communist state, where all the money is amongst the given select few, and the rest survive on virtually nothing. And this is where we are right now. And what we need to do is return to those origins. What our forefathers before us knew that they had to, you know, that knew this was the only way we were going to survive as a nation, is they kept the states different, and they kept them as sovereign entities, because they knew that no given state could gain enough power to take over the country. And that's why they left the federal government as a small entity. And see, what happened is that small entity grew into a monster. And this monster is who we're fighting today. And this is why we need to return to our origins, to downsize the federal government. I've been going through a list of federal departments. And I'm on, I'm just getting on the letter C, and I'm over 150 different departments. And this is where we have to consolidate down, put departments together, and get rid of people and make them either we're outsourcing these departments or just combining them. And the people who are employed under the Obama administration, 700,000 federal workers have been added to the federal government. Now, do you know how much money that costs? How many tens of millions of dollars that cost us? And, you know, they blame Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare, because dollar-wise, these three are the biggest single groups. But they don't realize how many thousands of departments are out there within the federal government that are chewing up a heck of a lot more money than Social Security, Medicaid, or Medicare. And this is what we have to do, is if we can cut this federal government down to size, like down by about 75%, we can cut our taxes down by lowering our taxes, especially corporate and individual taxes. The corporations can start growing again, start hiring people, and once this starts happening, these people have more disposable income. As the more companies hire more people, there are fewer people looking for jobs. As there's fewer people looking for jobs, that brings up the salaries of the individuals. And this is how you have a growing economy. What I love about economics is that economics is a self-perpetuating entity. Once it has something wrong with it, it tilts, and it falls down. And I like to say it throws the garbage out and what economists call corrections. And then it starts growing again, like a, you know, almost like a tree. It comes out stronger than it was before if left alone. And that's what we call the free enterprise system. And the way you keep an economy down is you put your paws into it. And this administration not only put their paws, they put their heads, they put everything into it. And they have overregulated it, overtaxed it. And every time the economy tries to grow, it is stifled. Now, last year to this year, growth in GDP, which is your primary health sign, it's almost like the temperature of the country's economy, the economy grew by less than 1% over the last 12 months. And what Obama said is, oh, look at the stock market. It has grown over the last 4 or 5 years. Well, as the dollar devaluates, of course the economy grows. I mean, the stocks will grow. But the money, the value of the money is actually going down. So what he was saying in his State of the Union address was nothing but a bunch of baloney. And, you know, we have to make changes there. We have to start at the local level, get true patriots, and patriots that will become statesmen. You know, people like, you know, Benjamin Franklin or Paul Revere or Henry David Thoreau, you know, people that never became politicians yet played a vital role in our nation's founding and the growth. And we need to do that again. We need these people who are willing to work for nothing and are willing to put in what is necessary to make this country great again. We can do it. I mean, we have the greatest nation in the world, even up to this day. But we're on a road to disaster. And if we don't change it, 50 years from now, we'll look like Cuba. And with that, I'll pass it back to you.
Oh, exactly, Dan. Exactly. And that's what Rafael Cruz said last night. That's where we're going. If you want to get there, let's just keep going. And, you know, Dan, what frustrates me is it's really rather simple. You know, this stuff is not rocket science. You know, we always use the phrase, it takes a rocket scientist, when we ended up with Herman Cain, who happened to be a rocket scientist. we gained a new appreciation for that phrase. But this isn't rocket science. You know, as Sid so eloquently stated, on just the issue of abortion and animals, which is a huge thing to me. I was adopted. I was adopted in 1968 before Roe versus Wade. My sister was adopted in 1973 after Roe versus Wade. And you know, life is precious. And I understand somebody that wants to save the whales. I even understand somebody that wants to save the cockroaches. You know, a few years ago, Dan, Magic Mountain did this thing where if you eat a cockroach, they would give you half price when you walked in the door. And, you know, I thought it was kind of crazy myself. But, you know, PETA and all those groups got all over it and went crazy on it. And a few weeks ago when I was visiting my aunt in Costa Mesa, we went to the mall, and we came outside Macy's, and there was a bunch of people protesting the furs, you know, the furs. And I understand somebody that loves animals. I love animals. I understand somebody that wants to save the whales. I understand that. I understand somebody that wants to take good care of animals. What I don't understand is those exact same people that are viral in their support of saving every single animal down to the fly. Remember, I'll give one thing to President Obama. That was really dumb when they attacked him for swatting a fly. Although I will say he deserved it, because that's his group. The choir, his own choir, is the one that slapped him down on that. But, you know, if you're going to stand for the sanctity of life in animals and not stand for the sanctity of life in individuals and in human beings, that's called hypocrisy. That's called hypocrisy. And it all goes back down to these same basic concepts. And it's simple. You know, taxes. It's really simple that when you've got an 80,000-page tax code and you've got leaders of Congress that control the purse strings, and, of course, now the President of the United States thinks he can control the purse strings, and you've got such a complicated thing, such a complicated bill, such a complicated setup, you're going to have problems. Look at the IRS. Look at the Fed. I was no Ron Paul supporter by a long shot, but, boy, I've got my problems with the Fed, the federal banking system. All of these things that we talk about, you know, NSA and their spying, all these things, they aren't – it's not rocket science. It's very, very simple to look. And look at history and see where history has taken us. And my phone's ringing, but it looks like it's one of those telemarketing calls. All of a sudden, they've got my phone number real quick. You know, when we look at these things, we see such a simple, simple way out. Let's look at some of the things that Sid talked about. You know, man, it's just really, really smart to me. Very smart, and I'm gonna be talking about this next month as we're leading towards this primary, and then after the primary, as he leads towards the general election, I'm gonna use it a lot because he hit my funny bone. Get those guys out of Austin, get them out of Austin, Texas, and ship them back out into the country, get them out where the people are. Federal government cannot micromanage. It absolutely cannot micromanage. The larger the organization, the less control, the more the waste, the fraud, the abuse, and the insanity. It's not difficult. You know, I have conversations with my brother-in-law about why I'm a Republican. And, you know, one of the things I always say, I'm a Republican because I think you're smarter than your government is. And, you know, I've used that before, and I've had people turn around and say, no, we're not smarter than the government is. Well, yeah, we are. man is not a stupid creature by a long shot. A man has better opportunity and better smarts to know what to do with his money than the federal government does. Now, here's some insanity. Here's a big insanity. It's one of my biggest pet peeves. So, Dan, you make some money, and the government needs some of that. And I don't have a problem with taxes. I've got some friends that want to just totally abolish taxes in the first place, and I don't think that's right. I think there's certain things. I think we need to support our military. I think we should help people in foreign countries that need help. When it's done logically, when it's done effectively, and when it's not done with waste, fraud, and abuse, I'm all for helping people. And I believe there's people in this country that need some help, and I believe that we've got the ability to do that. We're a wealthy nation. But, you know, Dan, let's say you send a dollar to Washington, D.C. Right off the top, it costs 30 cents out of that dollar just to collect the dollar. It's gone. It doesn't go to spending. It doesn't go to helping anybody. It's gone. It's absolutely gone. 30 cents out of the dollar, that's 30%, folks. 30% of the tax dollars that go to Washington, D.C., cut right off the top in order to collect that dollar costs 30 cents. Now, Dan, if you owned a business and it cost you 30 cents out of every dollar just to collect the money from your customer before you started delving into your overhead, you'd go broke. You'd go broke. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. You know, overhead on a restaurant, a good overhead is 33%. Many are a lot higher. You really got to keep it down to about 33% to make a profit. It's a lot of money. Then once that dollar gets to Washington, D.C., then what happens to it? Well, then let's take that dollar, that 70 cents that left, and let's just figure, let's just say, and I think I'm being really conservative right here, let's just say 10% of it, 10% of that, another 7 cents goes to waste, fraud, and abuse. And I think it's a whole lot higher than that, but for the sake of argument, let's just use that simple number. And then what do you have to do with that money? Then you've got to send it back to the states. Now, you're not going to tell me if it takes 30 cents on the dollar just to collect it, it doesn't cost more than 30 cents on a dollar to get it back out where it's supposed to be. So then they turn around and they send the money back down to the states. And then what do the states do with it? They got some waste, fraud, and abuse. And so a certain percentage of that money comes out. You know, by the time we get to actually spending the money, there's not a whole lot of money there left. Now, that's insanity, folks. As I was driving back from Fort Worth to Dallas last night, and I was looking around at all the buildings, and boy, Dallas at night is beautiful, folks. Dallas at night is beautiful. First time I got to see downtown Dallas at night last night, and the Omni Hotel all lit up, and some of the skyscrapers there that have beautiful lights all over them. It's a beautiful city at night. A lot prettier than Los Angeles by a long shot. I really wasn't expecting what I saw as I came back into town. But looking at all the wealth and all the money and all the tax dollars that come and go into our government, and where does it all go? Where does it all go, folks? And then you take what's left. You take what's left out of that dollar that hasn't gone to the 30 cents it costs to collect it. It hasn't gone to the money it takes to send it back out to the states. Waste, fraud, and abuse on behalf of the government, federal level, of the state government, federal level, when the state passes it down to the country, county level, federal, county level, waste, fraud, and abuse, the money it takes to get down there. Then you've got congressmen who are spending it unwisely. You've got, you know, they've done the sex habits of the ant. Why? Mm-hmm. And I sat and listened to a report yesterday. I was listening on talk radio last night coming back into Dallas about the environmental movement and the act. What's the act, Dan? To save the animals, the Endangered Species Act. And $1.7 billion to one animal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all for doing our best to say I'm an environmentalist through and through, but I'm not a socialist. And I believe that we need to take care of what we've got. I believe that's important. I believe that we should keep our water pretty clean, and I believe that we should keep our air clean as possible. I believe there's a big balance between losing jobs and insanity regulations that don't really, really help. And I believe when we go into the modern environmentalist movement, most of the things that are done, in fact, I would say the large majority of things that are done in the environmentalist movement in this country don't solve any problems. They're just like Obamacare. They're just like Common Core. They're not designed to solve the problem at hand. They're not designed to be a solution. They're designed to do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And we spend so much money on these things that are not necessary after we end up with what's left out of that dollar. Now,
right.
This is not political, folks. This is not partisan. This is just flat out, basic common sense. I'm going to say that one more time. This is just basic common sense. What if you lived your home that way?
Mm.
What if every time you went to the bank to put your money in the bank, you had to give the bank 30 cents? And what would happen if every time you took your money out, you had to pay a little bit? Well, we kind of do that with an ATM anymore. And sometimes when you cash a check at a bank that it's not an on-us check, even when it is an on-us check, they take money from you. But what would happen if you ran your home the way we run Washington, D.C.? What would happen if you ran your home the way we run our state houses? You'd be in the poorhouse. Well, that's where we're at, folks. That's where we're at. We're in the poorhouse. The wealthiest nation that's ever stood, and we're in the poorhouse. I look out my back garage, and I look at all these houses, these beautiful houses. I live in a nice little neighborhood. Medium-sized houses, middle-class neighborhood, beautiful brick houses all over the place. Lots of money there. There's families. families, each one of them working and have jobs and they have income. And just in the houses I can see hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars that go to Washington, D.C. And what happens to it? Folks, that's why if you're listening right now, go to Sid Miller. Go to Sid, or go from to Miller. Well, I hate websites because there's so many and they're all different. Miller for Texas. Give Sid a look. Give him a look and support him. Because I know where Sid stands, and I guarantee you Sid would just agree with what I just said. And I know when Sid ends up the agricultural commissioner in Texas, he's going to make sure that your money is spent wisely. Why do I know that? Because he says that on his website. Rodney Lee Conover. I guarantee you, when they go to spend money, and I'm telling you, I'm more confident about Rodney Lee Conover than I've ever been about any candidate in my life. When he goes to Washington, D.C., to Congress, when he's got a hold of your purse strings, if when those guys start, get choked up over it, when they go to spend money unwisely, he's going to be the first one to stand up and say, no, this is stupid. This is a waste of the people's money. It's the people's money. It's not our money. Our politicians don't say that enough. It's the people's money. It's not government's money. And they've been trusted to handle it. No common sense. No common sense. You know, gun rights, man. And I've never been a gun person. I haven't shot a whole lot in my life. It just never was anything. I wasn't really a hunter. I'd much rather go out and see the nature than go hunting. I've got a soft spot for Bambi, but I at the same time, I don't mind eating Bambi. I just want somebody else to shoot her. I'm just that way. But, you know, let me tell you, we've got to have the right to protect ourselves. And, you know, again, it's just flat-out common sense, folks. It's flat-out common sense. You find me a criminal that's willing to obey the laws of the land, and your gun control might have some effect. But you can make all the gun control in the whole wide world, and it is not going to stop the people that are abusing the weapons from abusing them. It is only going to take them out of the hands that don't. It is so simple, Dan. It makes me so angry that people don't get that basic concept. It's so simple. It's not difficult. It's not rocket science. It's absolutely not rocket science.
Well,
and I'm all for making sure that a five-year-old can't walk into Walmart and take a gun and walk out and hand cash and buy a gun. But the federal government can't stop that. The state government can't stop that. That's up to Walmart to stop that. And I don't have a problem with there being a law that a 21-year-old, you have to be 21 in order to buy a gun, or 18. I don't have a problem with that. I would actually probably prefer 18 above 21. But either one of those, I don't have a problem with that. But California is in the middle of trying to pass all these gun regulations. You can't have this kind of magazine. You can't have this kind of gun. You can't have this. You can't have that. And it's not going to bring down gun control, gun problems. How do I know that? Are you guessing, Scott? Are you just talking off the side of your mouth? No, I'm not, because right now California's got the most stringent Brady laws in the United States of America. Of all 50 states, it's got the most stringent gun laws anywhere, and it's got the highest problem with gun crime. The highest. The gun control in California is not only not working, not only not working, folks, it's made it worse. And we know that. That's common sense. You take the guns away from the good people, and the people that are bad people have the guns. What are you going to have? You're going to have a problem.
Well, if you look
it's
at
simple.
It, and
if you think
about it, a criminal is less likely to attack a person when they don't know whether or not that person's armed. For instance, here in this state, in Florida, we have conceal and carry. And, you know, if a guy came up to me with a .38, I'd pull out my .45. And
that's right.
That is a really good deterrent, because a .45 puts in a little hole on going in and a big hole going out.
right.
And, I mean, I am not a murderer or anything like that. But you know something? For personal protection, I can rely on this. You know? And, see, this is a whole thing that the other side doesn't understand. Is that, you see, if the criminal knows that you have the ability to protect yourself, they are less likely to attack and do it themselves. You know, what happened with Zimmerman is a prime example. You know, the kid did not know that Zimmerman was armed, and Zimmerman was able to save his life because of that concealed and carry permit. And you see, this is the whole premise. That's part of the premise. And the other premise is that Hitler said this. Hitler said the best way to take over a country is to first to disarm the people. And you see, when you disarm the people, they have no way of protecting themselves. Our Second Amendment, it says right off the top, in order to maintain a well-regulated militia, see, its whole idea of the Second Amendment was allowing the states to protect themselves against an out-of-control government. And this is the whole foundation behind the Second Amendment. Going out and shooting Bambi is a secondary clause. I mean, I hate to say it, our forefathers weren't thinking about that because that's how they put food on their table. And that was a given. The whole idea behind the Second Amendment was to make sure that you could protect yourself from an outside entity coming in, an invading, you know, group from another country, or to protect yourself from an out-of-control government. And that is the foundation of the Second Amendment. And this is why Nugent fights so hard for gun control, gun rights. This is why I went out and bought that .45. Was for protection, because you know something, I don't trust this government. And you know something, if heaven forbid, if they try to take us over and try to pull off a coup, I want to make sure that I'm able to do my part in nothing else, slowing them down, because I'm not going to go to a FEMA camp and rot away or be put to death like happened in Germany. And more Americans need to think that way, need to look at it and arming themselves so that they can create militias and that they can protect themselves, simply protect your family and protect yourself from the criminals. It's... you know, my gun is always loaded. There's always a bullet in the chamber, and the only thing I have to do is click the safety off, and it's ready to fire. And that's the way that really, you know, you're supposed to do it. In order to make sure that children don't fire, there's a nice little clip that goes right where the trigger is. That can be undone with a key, and if the child can't get a hold of that key, they can play with the gun all they want, and they can't shoot it. There's some common sense things that you got to use when there are children involved. For me, I don't have to worry about that. So I just need to be able to get to it quickly, and use it, you know. It's sitting at home. It's sitting in my my end table, and all I have to do if I'm in bed and I hear somebody break in, I open a drawer and I reach in, I have my gun. And if I'm out traveling, because I haven't gotten my concealed permit yet, I put it in its case and it sits in the back seat. But all I have to do is two clips, I undo it, I can grab it, and my gun's there. And I can protect myself. And see, this is the whole idea, this is some of the ideas behind what the Second Amendment stands for. You know, protection of the state and protection of the personal. You know, so I can protect my personal self. And, you know, you were talking about taxes earlier and how much of your tax dollar goes in back to you, you know, when you make your investment. Well, when I was in college, my major was economics. And we broke it all down, and it's gotten worse. But for every dollar that you give the federal government, how much comes back to you personally in the form of roads, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, that sort of thing? Your return is 10 cents on every dollar. So we call that in economics, we call that return on investment. I'll tell you this much, there's not one person who is going to invest in a company when for every dollar they give them, they get 10 cents back. And if the government was a private company, it would die within its first year. And this is what people don't understand, is the government has so much crap that they take out of it. People don't realize. Let's take groceries, and let's take a bag of rice-a-roni. That little bag, box of rice-a-roni, is taxed 16 times before it makes it to the grocery store shelf. And this is what people have to understand, is that, you know, you have inventory control, you have sales tax, you have personnel, employees' taxes. You have to pay taxes on their benefits. You have to pay taxes on the building. You have to pay taxes on the machinery. I mean, this is before it's even left the building. And then once it leaves the building, you got to pay highway taxes. You got to pay again the cost of that truck. You got to pay taxes on that. You got to be taxed on the fuel of that truck. You got to get taxed on when that truck delivers it, and they sell it to the stores. The grocery stores have an inventory tax, and you see it gets taxed upon taxed upon taxed. So you have at the end, before it reaches a grocery store shelf, it's taxed 16 times. And people don't realize that. Every dollar, every gallon you put in your car is the same thing. If it wasn't for all the taxes, a gallon of gas would cost about 50 cents a gallon. And you see, this is what the problem is. Is, you know, the progressives want to tax you more, but give you less. And they always say, oh, we need it for this, for this, for this. Well, the fact is, if we gave it to them directly, we'd get a hell of a lot more on investment. And, see, this is the thing they don't tell you. Obama was saying how, you know, the economy is doing great because of the stock market. No, the economy is doing terrible. The only reason the stock market is going up is the dollar is going down. Why? Because overtaxation, overregulation. I mean, it's not, as you said, it's not rocket science. You want to know what a free enterprise system is? Leave it alone. Real simple. Leave the economy alone and it will take care of itself and it will grow like wildfire. If you want our nation to thrive, these are the things you need to do. I mean, if you want to help, you know, with Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare and provide more funding for these people and our military, all you have to do is get rid of the 15,000, 20,000 departments that are useless and are doing nothing. It's not rocket science. And we could turn this country around in a matter of a few years if people would just open their eyes and see. I mean, this is what drives me nuts. Is it's all so simple. You know, Milton Friedman, my hero of economics, had a wonderful, wonderful way of putting things into very simple terms. And he did, I recommend that people do a search for Milton Friedman on The Donahue Show. And Donahue had Milton Friedman on. And Donahue tried to argue from the progressive standpoint. And Friedman just tore him apart. And because Milton Friedman just told it like it was. And he told it in simple economic terms that everybody could understand. And this is what our nation has gotten into, is they have, the politicians who are attorneys intentionally make it so difficult to understand that people don't understand that we can break this down to very, very simple terms. And every one of my posts, I try to do that. That's why I call Congress a herd of cows. Because that's a very simple term that everybody can equate to. We don't need these fancy terminologies. We don't need to use Latin. You know, a language that's been dead for how long? The only people that use Latin are lawyers. You know, we can make this a lot simpler. We can make this whole entire country a lot simpler. But the more complex the politicians keep it, the easier it is to hide their misgivings. And this is my argument with the grassroots, you know, for the grassroots movement. This is why I want the farmer. This is why I want the machinist to run for office. Joe the plumber. Because you know something, these are everyday people who understand through every day the way they live, their regular lives themselves shows. And they know what the trials and tribulations are of the individual. And see, the politician tries to hide that. See, we need everyday people in office. Everyday people with conviction. You know, take Paul Revere. Paul Revere was not a politician. He was a silversmith. And yet, you know something? He was one of our great leaders. And see, this is what we need more of. We need our silversmiths. We need our machinists, our farmers. You know, we need everyday people. who understand enough that they can be able to set this country straight. And they can say, well, damn, you know, I'm paying all this in taxes. I can't afford my new combine. I can't afford to feed my cattle. I mean, this is what works, is when you see the everyday person who's saying, I can't afford things. You know, I mean, take even a person who's a member of a union and turn around and say, can you go out and buy groceries and put enough food on your table? And if you explain to them that they got taxed 16 times on every item that they bought, you're going to find out somebody gets really pissed off. And see, this is what we got to open the minds of everybody, the progressives and the conservatives alike, is that we're being taxed to death, and the only way we can stop taxation to this level is by turning around and reducing the size of the government. And this is what will change our nation, and this is what we can do to turn us around and bring us back to a nation that is productive, where people have money, and where we can once again thrive and be the greatest nation on earth. And with that, back to you.
Well, exactly, Dan. Exactly. And that's why we fight for what we fight for, you know? And, man, I just don't understand. And I know part of it comes from people being just uninformed. But I don't understand people not just understanding just the regular common sense of life. And part of it, you mentioned, you know, we don't remember our history. You know, I teach Old Testament history. I teach that novel in the Old Testament from Genesis to Esther. I'll use that for a plug for Friday's show, Ladies Bible Class, where we just ended the life of King Saul and are starting the life of King David. And as you read through that Old Testament, you see a pattern. And what that pattern is man always forgot history. And God keeps telling the people, remember Egypt. Remember what I did for you in Egypt. Remember when I pulled you from slavery and gave you freedom. And the reason why that was so important in the Old Testament is because in the New Testament, Christ relieves us from the slavery of sin, and he brings us into the freedom that we have when we're released from that. And you know, that gets into the Bible a little bit, but it's a basic concept that remember your history. Remember your history. And we've got a great history in this country, and people don't remember it. They don't remember where we came from, and so we end up back in spots. You know, we came over here in the first place. There were two groups of people on that Mayflower. There were the pilgrims who were fleeing religious oppression. They were being told how to think and how to worship. And then there were the strangers, and the strangers were out because they didn't necessarily have a non-belief in God, but they were interested in exploring. And they both came here, and the two combination of the two together is why we right now have what the country we have, because that's what this country was founded on. But if we don't look back and we don't look that this is where we're going again, the left wants to take us to oppression of religion. They don't want us to be able to say anything we want from the pulpit. They don't want us to be able to condemn sin from the pulpit. They don't want us to be able to call out a spade from the pulpit. And so we're heading back in that direction again. And you know, a lot of it's just people. When man gets too comfortable, he tends to neglect what's important. And you said something that was very important, Dan, and Rodney Conover says this a lot. You know, the Second Amendment wasn't made for hunters. The Second Amendment was made to protect ourselves. And as we look at our country and we see times get worse and worse, we need to be able to protect ourselves. We flat out need to protect ourselves. And that's what it's all about. We're coming up to the end of the hour, and I'm going to go ahead and close out the show. I got things to do. We got a new big screen TV coming here pretty quick. My sister and brother-in-law just went to go pick that up. 72 inches, Dan. I'm going to be able to watch some big old movies. That's going to be kind of fun. But, you know, it's emblematic of who we are. We're Americans, and we like our nice things. But as long as we don't forget where we came from. And that's why I believe it's up to the candidates to inform the country. The news media is not going to do it. The candidates are going to have to get out, and they're going to have to explain these things to the voters. Because the people in office, especially on the Democratic side, they know the logic to all this. They're not stupid. They know the logic to Second Amendment rights. They know the logic to Obamacare. They know the logic to Common Core. But they're after a different means. They're heading in a different direction. And we've got to make that clear to the American people. The American people have got to wake up. You know, Ted Cruz's dad, Rafael Cruz, last night, he says, I think Obamacare is probably the best thing that ever happened to this country because it's waking up a lot of people that weren't paying attention before. They're starting to see. They may not watch the news. They may not pay attention to current events or what's going on politically. But when they get that little letter in the mail that says we've canceled your insurance policy, they're standing up and taking notice. And I think we've got a chance to pull this country back and go back in a Reagan direction. I really do. But it's a matter of getting out and talking to the people. I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican. You're a Frederick Douglass Republican, Dan. So is Jennifer Montrose and Rodney Stanhope, our co-hosts on Tuesdays. I believe in what Kay Carl says. But the main reason that I believe in what he says is because it motivates people to get out and speak to their neighbors. It motivates people to speak to the guy that cuts their hair or the girl that cuts their hair. It motivates them to speak to the person in the line at the grocery store. Because that's what we got to do, folks. That's what we got to do. You know, we had Sid Miller on. I've been looking forward to this one for a long time. Michael Smith introduced me to Sid a while back. And said, look at him, and I did. And I've been following him, and I've been posting about him, and I was excited about it. Folks, get out there, if you're in Texas, and tell your friends about Sid Miller. Go tell them. Tell them this is a guy who believes in what he believes. He's going to fight for your freedoms. He's going to fight for your Constitution. He's going to fight against abortion. He's going to fight for your Second Amendment rights. Get out there and talk. Talk about what you believe in. Don't be afraid. You know, the left has thrown this, two things that we're not supposed to talk about, politics and religion. That's the dumbest thing that was ever, you know, invented. And I think even a lot of conservatives turn around and they don't like to talk about politics. Well, we got to talk about politics, folks. Because if we don't talk about politics, we're going to lose this great nation that we've got. And I would hate to see that. Another thing that Rafael Cruz said last night is, you know, this is about our kids and our future generations. This is about our future generations. This is about his grandkids and the life that they've got in 40 years from now. You know, technology leads us in a certain direction anyways. We just know by the very nature of the beast that technology gives government easier and easier access to control our lives. Back at least during Hitler's time, he couldn't swap through and instantly find out everything we were communicating. It would have taken a lot of work to read the letters that people were writing and to listen in on their conversations personally. But today we do everything over the Internet, and the government can just swoop in. You think Hitler was bad. The government's got the ability now because of technology to do that on a grand scale, and they are doing it. They are doing it. They're probably listening to us right now, Dan. That's why I say NSA, that's all right. You send this radio show to Barack Obama, and he might learn something. That would be nice. I happen to enjoy when they're listening to what I have to say. I figure that they might learn something. But that's where we're going. And this is our Saturday Symposium show with Dan Wilson. We do this every Saturday. It's time when Dan and I get together, just him and I, and talk about been there and done that, and talk to great candidates like Sid Miller was today. I know that he was everything that I expected. Everything that I expected, and I got to hear him voice it for himself instead of just reading it. And he's a great, great eloquent speaker. He said everything just right on down the line. So one more time, MillerForTexas.com. You can find his Facebook there. You can find his Twitter there. Go there. If you can donate, donate, please. It takes money to get this stuff done. And if you can, just talk about him. Talk about him to your friends. If you're out of state, post about him. Just go on there and make a Facebook post. Let your friends know. I'm sure if you're like me and you got 1,500 friends or so, some of them are in Texas. Maybe they haven't heard of Sid Miller yet. Get that word out. Because we're going to keep doing that. Each week, we've got some different shows here on Contending for Truth Radio. You know, Dan and I, with Jennifer Montrose and Rodney Stanhope, on Tuesdays, I have Parental Sovereignty Radio. We talk about Common Core. We talk about Obamacare, all kinds of things. This next Tuesday, we've got a friend, Moshe Starkman, a friend from Herman Cain days, definitely, a great, great guy. He was a hard worker, and he's got Centrix, and it's a great piece of software that he's developed to help candidates do their thing. And last week, we had Tara Bailey and Mitzi, and it was a great show. If you want to find out about iCaucus, go into our archives and listen to that show. I learned a lot. It was great. We also want to encourage you, Rodney Lee Conover for Congress. Rodney Lee Conover, I'm sorry, conoverforcongress.com. conoverforcongress.com. Go to Rodney Lee. Check him out in California 8. He's doing a great job there. Absolutely. Incredible candidate. Give him some help. We talk about all those things on Tuesday nights. Rodney calls in from time to time to talk to us there as well. On Thursdays, we got the IRP 6. We've got a Just Cause Coast to Coast. Each week they do the show. It's a great show. And they're fighting the cause of wrongful convictions. And it's an incredible story. You don't want to miss it. Friday morning, of course, my ladies' Bible class. This week, Dan, they had spice cake. And they just know what they're doing to me because I'm sitting here in Texas, and they're sitting around the Betty's table there eating spice cake, and I can't get any because they can't shove it through the phone. But we're having a great time anyways. I call them before. I call them afterwards. And we're continuing what I've done for about 5 years now, study that Old Testament with them. We also had a couple of friends that aren't always able to be there. Carolyn Rutherford moved to Kansas. Now she's able to listen on Contending for Truth Radio on the internet, and my good friend, somebody I took care of for a couple of years as a caretaker, Beverly Keene in California, was listening to us on the phone. So we had a great audience. Quite a few people listened to that show and really appreciate that. I've got a love for the Old Testament. And on Monday nights, you know, you want to talk about some fun, Rodney Stanhope and Brian Dawson. If you think Kennedy and Combs was fun, you ain't seen nothing yet. Stanhope and Dawson, let me tell you, those two go at it. Now, Brian Dawson says he's a liberal, but I wouldn't call him a liberal. I might call him a Democrat, and I'd call him a pretty conservative Democrat at that. But they find plenty to disagree about and plenty to discuss. They both make their cases very, very eloquently. And have a great time. Join them for that on Monday nights here on Contending for Truth Radio. And each week, as we do different things, we want you to continue to support these candidates. Connie Burton, we're going to have on soon on a show. She's running to replace that Wendy girl that thinks she can run for governor. I'll tell you, Dan, I think the Democrats in Texas are realizing that they picked a dud. She's falling apart faster than a cat running with a yarn of thread while somebody's trying to do some knitting. I'm telling you, the whole thing is unraveling. And I so far, all of the poll numbers, so she's so far behind, I think it's going to be an actual embarrassment to the Democratic Party by the time they're all done. Because they're in here, Battleground Texas is in here, trying to turn Texas blue. And I don't think I think that might be a long-term goal that might possibly happen. Some of these stranger things have happened. But I don't think they're going to do it this time around. Well, Connie Burton is running for state senate to replace the seat that Wendy Davis is leaving in order to run for governor. And met her last night. She's great. Go check her out on Facebook. Go check out her website. She's grassroots, man. She's one of us. And she's tired of all the nonsense, and she's running. Got to meet her. Got to meet her husband last night. A great guy. Had some great politic and talking. Got to meet Lawrence. Excuse me. Lawrence Jones with Project Veritas, a friend of James O'Keefe's, who's working really hard. He lives just right, not too far down the street from me, actually, just a hop, skip, and a jump away from me. Got to meet him last night. He's working really, really hard, doing a lot of things in the area. He's not running for office yet, but he is working really, really hard. So go to Project Veritas and check them out. And all the other candidates, man, Dave Souza, wow, what a good guy. A good man needs your support. Give him support. Go to Dave Souza's website and check him out as well. And so, Dan, until next time and until next Tuesday, we're going to say goodbye. We didn't start the show. I thought we were going to be a little bit pressed for time right at the beginning, but Sid got way late, as we saw, so we kind of held Red Skelton until the end, and we're going to bring Red Skelton on right now. You know, it's very important, this Pledge of Allegiance, and Red Skelton could really, really say it the way it was, and we appreciate him for that. We miss him dearly. Red, take it away.
I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. This is true. I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. It was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher, Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell, he says, he says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity. Allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom, wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United, that means that we have all come together. States, individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose, and that's love for country. And to the Republic, a state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people, and it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people. For which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice, the principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others. For all. Which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance: under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer, and that would be eliminated from schools too?